believe me when I tell you that if you Google how many people did Jesus heal in Mark's gospel, you will be directed to websites which espouse a biblical interpretation or a theology that you might not ever have imagined existed. Better to read through the gospel yourself and do your own counting, which I did. Mark recounts the healing of 11 individuals and then three times the healing of many people. Today's story of the healing of blind Bartimaeus is the last healing in this gospel, so perhaps we should pay attention to the story. After this story, Jesus enters Jerusalem where he meets his death. Healing Bartimaeus is his last act as a teacher healer. And in this story, we see the culmination of so many themes that Mark has presented. If you've been in worship for the last month, or if you're the kind of person to go back and read or listen to the sermons online, you'll know that Mark has continued to present the teaching that the last shall be first, and the first shall be last, and those who would be great must become the servant of all. And if you've been in worship for the last month, or if you're the kind of person to go back and read the lectionary readings, you'll remember that the disciples continue not to understand this teaching. They still want to be great in the worldly sense, have power and prestige, and leave the serving to the other people. In this story, it is Bartimaeus who understands Jesus' teaching. Like any person in Jesus' time who had a physical impairment, Bartimaeus lived at the bottom of society. He's one of the last. He's considered unclean and kept apart from any community. He must beg in order to receive any sustenance, so he sits outside the gates of the city where a large number of people will pass, hoping to receive maybe a piece of bread or a coin. He spreads out his cloak before him, where people can toss their charity. We've not seen Bartimaeus before in this gospel, and the little we might know about him can come from his name, which translated from Aramaic can either mean son of honor or son of the unclean. The Greek and the Aramaic are confused in this, but perhaps Mark, the great writer that he is, gives the man this name intentionally, as Jesus came to restore honor to the unclean. So picture in your mind's eye, close your eyes if you want, this scene of Jesus and the 12 disciples and the crowd of his followers leaving the gate of the city. Maybe it's a dry, dusty day and the Palestinian sun is beating overhead. People are hot and their feet are dirty and they're starting their 12-mile walk to Jerusalem. At the crossroads of the city gate, it's noisy, but one voice rises above the din. Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. In the midst of the crowd, Jesus cannot see Bartimaeus, but he can hear him, and so he stops. And it's as if everything starts happening in slow motion. Gone is the bustle of the crowd, kicking up dirt, chattering about the journey to Jerusalem. Gone are the apathy and the blindness about seeing yet one more beggar. Gone is the pretense of what is great. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asks. He asks the same question of James and John a few verses earlier. They asked to be great, to be seated in honor. Bartimaeus simply says, "My teacher, Rabuni, let me see again." Now, it's entirely possible that for Bartimaeus to ask for sight is to ask for greatness. If he's able to see, he can go to the temple. He can be ritually purified. He can rejoin society. He will still be poor, but he won't be destitute because he will have a community. He can move within the walls of the city and live. But he doesn't do that. Hearing Jesus say, "Go, your faith has made you well," Bartimaeus sees, and then he follows Jesus. He's the only person in Mark's gospel, when healed, who then follows Jesus. He may decide that the gift of sight is a double-edged sword, though, because if he follows Jesus all the way into Jerusalem, he will see his teacher questioned. He will see his healer arrested and tried and convicted and killed. Would it be worth regaining his sight if it means seeing that cruelty and that evil and that sin? On Friday, as I read the paper, I saw a picture of a young Yemeni girl, malnourished and on the brink of starvation. And as I looked at it, I thought, I wish I hadn't seen that. It's just too hard. It's too hard to see that kind of suffering. And it's too hard to admit that she's one of millions of children who, through no fault of her own, live on the brink of dying. And it's too hard to be so deeply troubled and to feel so utterly powerless to do anything. And because my understanding of why this young Yemen girl is starving has to do with the political realities of war and power of governance in Saudi Arabia and our country's relationship with the Saudis, in a larger sense, though, I'm not sure what goal is worth achieving if it means that children will die in the process of achieving that goal. So we close our eyes to pictures that are too hard to see. We can choose blindness and not be confronted with the aftermath of war and natural disasters and politics and plain old greed. And in closing our eyes, we become like Bartimaeus in a way, beggars for hope and justice, desperately in need of healing. I hit a bit of a low point this week, which is not a usual place for me to be. I woke up at 4 a.m. on Wednesday morning with a pounding headache. And then I had coffee with a friend, and as we sat down, she leaned across the table and said, "How are you doing with everything that's going on?" And tears sprang to my eyes. Pipe bombs, Yemen, this caravan of migrants coming through Central America, fleeing violence and death, and the 800 soldiers who have been deployed to meet them at the border, and what will happen then? Add attacks from every side as midterm elections draw closer. All of it, plus a headache and some heartache. And it was only Wednesday, and the events at the Tree of Life hadn't even happened yet. So as I had coffee with my friend, and we were both a little weepy, I picked up this salt shaker that was on the table. And I said something like, the good that we do, the hope that we have, maybe it's like a tiny grain of salt. It's so small. But I guess if we add one grain of salt to another grain of salt, to another grain of salt, eventually we have enough for a teaspoon. And then we have enough for a salt shaker. And eventually we have enough for that cardboard cylinder of Morton salt with the girl with the umbrella. And eventually, if we add one grain at a time, we get a huge pile. Feeling so low, I challenged myself to look for joy. And I found it. But it was so small. It's like I had to squint to see it. It's like I needed binoculars because it was so far away. I realized that if I'm going to keep my eyes open to the suffering of the world, I also have to keep my eyes open for the joy that's in the world. Do you know what I mean? On Tuesday night at our session meeting, we had the privilege of meeting our new friend, Benedicto Istamer, who's sitting there in the back. Hi, Benedicto. Buenos dias. Benedicto's art is on display. Today is the last day it will be on display in our gallery. He made a brief presentation to the session about his work in Guatemala and reminded us of the deep poverty there, which is a result in part of the 30-year civil war there and the prejudice against the indigenous people and a lack of access to education and health care. Now, if you've seen Benedicto's art, and if you haven't, go up after worship and look at it. You will know how joyful it is. The color and the people, their pictures of people working together, and the structure somehow makes it feel whole and safe. I said something to Benedicto about the joy in his art, and he talked about painting and community, and I hope I remember this correctly. He said that he paints something, and then everyone looks at it. And if it isn't right, he goes back and tries something different. So maybe the joy that we see in his art isn't from the colors or the composition or the subject matter, but we see the joy of the community that allowed it to be created. This week, our financial secretary, Daryl King, told us about attending a talk at the Alberta Rose Theater by Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Eli Saslow. He spoke about his book, Rising Out of Hatred, The Awakening of a Former White Nationalist. It's the story of Derek Black, a young man who was raised by white nationalists and whose godfather was David Duke. The book recounts the awakening Derek Black had in college, where, as one review states, some students protested Derek's presence on campus, forcing him to reconcile for the first time with the ugliness of his beliefs. Other students found the courage to reach out to him, including an Orthodox Jew who invited Derek to attend weekly Shabbat dinners. It was because of those dinners and the wide-ranging relationships that formed at the table that Derek started to question the science, history, and prejudices behind his worldview. In a way, I see joy in this story too. And maybe that's how the world changes. One grain of salt at a time, one person at a time, one community at a time. When I read the stories of Jesus' healing, I see that he heals one person at a time. He doesn't wave his hand over a crowd and pronounce everyone to be well. It is in the personal encounter that one is made whole. At the same time, Jesus never healed in private. It was always within a community, be it the community of a household or the community of the disciples or the community of the crowd that came to see if Jesus was for real. It is in community that we are able to really see each other and not rely on our memories or our imagination. It is in community where we remind each other not only to see the suffering of the world, but also to look for the joy. It is in community where we are healed by love and hope and grace. So maybe in the coming weeks, you could think about someone who's been missing from one of your communities. Maybe it's the person you usually share a pew with, or someone who's in your book club, or someone you usually see on a walk or at the coffee shop. Think about that person and reach out to them. Become a community of two. I know it might not seem like much, but it might mean the world to that person. And it might mean the healing of one person. And so one person is healed, and then another, and then another. Amen.